Cavalcade of Kings. Queen Anne. The cavalcade of kings rides on. Anne, Queen of Great Britain and Ireland, approaches. She was born at St. James' Palace on the 6th of February, 1665, and was the second daughter of James II and his first wife, Anne Hyde. In 1683, Anne married the handsome young Prince George of Denmark, and soon after appointed Sarah Churchill, wife of John Churchill, afterwards the famous Duke of Marlborough, as one of her ladies-in-waiting. It is March 1702. King William is dying in his palace at Kensington. Anne sits in her green room at St. James with her husband, Prince George, awaiting news of her royal brother-in-law.
Only there was some way in which we could help him. But we can do nothing but sit here and await the end. Poor William.
A brave king, a fractious horse, and destiny in the shape of a molehill. Oh, it is too bad. William deserved a grander fate than that, Anne.
Yes. I can see him at the head of his army, leading his troops to battle. Dying as he turns defeat into victory.
Instead of it, he is dying of the ague and a lacerated lung, which was caused by a broken collarbone.
He tried so hard to promote a more kindly relationship between Mary and me, but failed. Mary's only reason being that she loathed and detested my dear friend, Sarah Churchill.
You were not to blame for the unhappy state of affairs which existed between your sister and yourself. Mary was ever unduly harsh and bitter towards you, Anne.
Hush, dear. Mary is dead. I bear her no malice.
Oh. Are you cold, dear?
No, George, I don't know what made me shudder. Unless...
William!
I wonder...
Anne, have you thought of the colossal task that lies before you and of the responsibilities which will fall upon your shoulders when William passes and you become queen of this great and glorious kingdom?
Yes, George. And whilst I know my path will be beset with many thorns, I have faith in God, to whom I pray nightly for guidance, to give me courage and strength of purpose to do my duty, loyally and faithfully to England and her people. At the moment, all is chaotic. No orders are obeyed, no faults punished, because of the ill intelligence amongst those in authority and the dissensions in the council. I mean to put our house in order, George, and you are going to help me do it.
I help you, Anne? Any authority I might once have possessed has been stripped from me by the humiliations I have suffered at William's hands.
I do not think he really meant to be unkind, George.
Anne, I have not forgotten, if you have, the time I took part at my own expense in the king's expedition to Ireland. I fought for him and served him loyally, but he ignored my presence during the campaign and even refused me a seat in the royal court. Later, when William was on the point of leaving for the war in Flanders, I begged in vain to serve at sea as a volunteer without any command. He merely laughed in my face and took a far less able man. These are not the only occasions when William has humiliated me to the dust. And if I had not loved you so well, Anne, I could not have borne my suffering.
Does my love mean so much to you, my dear?
More than you'll ever know, beloved.
News at last. Enter. My Lord Bishop.
I bring sad tidings, my daughter.
The king
has passed away.
Poor William. God rest his soul.
My daughter, you are prepared to assume the high estate which is rightfully yours?
I am prepared, my Lord Bishop.
It is well. Our late king's ministers will arrive at any moment to confer with you, my daughter.
Enter.
Your privy councillors have arrived, madam.
Admit my lords immediately.
Yes, madam. Enter, my lords.
My lords, I am extremely sensible of the general misfortune of this kingdom, in the unspeakable loss of the king, and of the weight and burden which has fallen upon my shoulders. The great concern I have for the preservation of our religion and the laws and liberties of my country are very dear to me. You may depend upon it that no pains or diligence shall be wanting on my part to preserve and support them, to maintain the succession in the Protestant line and the government in church and state as it is by law established.
Madam, England is fortunate in possessing such a worthy successor to our late beloved sovereign. What say, my lord?
I thank you, my lord Mulgrave, and my lords. I think it is proper, upon this occasion of my first speech to you, to declare my own opinion of the importance of carrying on the preparations we are making to oppose the great power, France. And I shall lose no time in giving our allies all assurances that nothing shall be wanting on my part to pursue the true interests of England, together with theirs for the support of the common cause. My lords, I know my heart to be entirely English, and I can sincerely assure you that there is not one thing you can expect or desire of me which I shall not be ready to do for the happiness and prosperity of England.
On St. George's Day, April the 23rd, 1702, Anne was crowned Queen of England. Shortly after, she made her husband Commander-in-Chief of the Army and Lord High Admiral of the Fleet. She created Lord Mulgrave, who had once been a suitor for her hand, Duke of Buckingham and Lord Privy Seal. And Marlborough was reappointed Ambassador Extraordinary to The Hague and the Chief in Command of the Army on the Continent, which was to make war against France. It is 1704, and Queen Anne is anxiously awaiting news of Marlborough's activities in the Netherlands. Colonel Parke arrives, worn and mud-spattered after his 7 days' ride across Europe.
Colonel Parke, I insist that you drink a glass of wine before you speak. You are well nigh exhausted. I shall pour it for you myself. Here, drink it. It will revive you.
Thank you, Your Majesty. Ah, the wine is almost as good as the glorious tidings I bring from Marlborough.
We have been victorious.
It is the greatest victory since Agincourt, Your Majesty. The British troops are safe, and England exalted beyond our wildest dreams.
And France?
The Battle of Blenheim has humbled France and completely crushed her power over Europe.
Tell me every detail, so that I can appreciate to the full the bravery of my troops and their general, my Lord Duke of Marlborough.
The French army was in Bavaria. Marlborough suddenly marched up the Rhine and across the wooded hills of the Black Forest. He found the French army at Blenheim on the Danube and utterly defeated it. It was the first time a French army has been defeated during the reign of Louis.
My heart thrills with pride, my good Colonel Parke. God bless you for your diligence in hastening home with such glorious tidings. I now take pleasure in offering you the customary reward of £500, which is always given to the bearer of good news.
Gracious lady, £500 means a lot to a poor soldier. But there is something I would treasure far more than 500 times £500.
And what is that, Colonel Parke?
The gift of your Majesty's portrait.
Sir, such a poor thing is a most inadequate reward for the faithful service you have performed.
It is something that money cannot buy, ma'am, and only you can bestow.
Then I shall give you this miniature, which was painted by Nella. Take it with my heartfelt thanks and my blessing.
God bless you, ma'am. It is a singular honor to be privileged to serve such a gracious lady as Queen Anne of England.
In 1708, Prince George died, a blow from which Anne never really recovered. Burdened during the whole of her reign by foreign wars, she never wavered. And once in 1703, when Godolphin failed her and Marlborough threatened to resign, the Queen alone stood firm for the ardent prosecution of the war until the time arrived when all political reasons for continuing it were ended. It is August the 1st, 1714. Queen Anne is dying. Our ministers are with her, amongst them being the Duke of Shrewsbury.
My lord, I have been most fortunate in being surrounded and supported during my reign by many brave men. Marlborough, Rooke, Buckingham, Bolingbroke, Harley, men whose names will be written in letters of gold on the pages of England's history. How very grateful I am to them all for their loyal and faithful service to me, their queen.
We have counted it an honor to have served your majesty.
Ah, Shrewsbury, that has not always been the case. Many times have the Whigs hectored me and tried to frighten me into a compliance with their wishes. They thought, because I was a woman, I would be pliable and weak, but they were mistaken.
No man could have ruled England more wisely than Queen Anne has done.
That is a great compliment, my Lord Duke. And now, tell me, what is this talk of a Jacobite restoration I hear?
A move is on foot to place James Fitzjames on the English throne.
Then I shall frustrate the intrigues of these disturbers of our peace by placing the white staff of the Treasurer's office in your hands, my Lord Duke. See to it that you serve my heir, George, Elector of Hanover, with the same zeal and diligence as you have served Anne Stuart. And now, good Shrewsbury, there are some personal bequests I would make. Christopher Wren, John Evelyn, Doc, and Isaac Newton. Here is the list. I know I can rely upon you to perform this last service for me.
It shall be my most sacred trust, Your Majesty.